Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Situation Room.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Situation Room. I'm Jordan Coe, and I'm here with my co-host, Gabe Ferguson. You guys can find me at Raven Sit Room, and you can find him at Gabe Fergie. And, Gabe, this was the start of, I think, what we wanted to see from this Ravens team this week.
Yeah, I mean, especially, or I'll say, at least on the offensive side of the ball. We kind of had some thoughts going into this season about the players that would be available. We thought, you know, running backs coming back, offensive line improvements would be key. And then obviously, you know, Lamar Jackson coming back from a season where he got hurt last year and cut short. So there was a lot of things that we thought would potentially be very optimistic for the offense. And through 3 weeks, they're the best offense in the NFL, at least from a scoring perspective, 33 points a game. EPA is very high. Lamar's looked fantastic. Pretty much everything they've wanted to do, they've been able to do, which is great to see.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's probably right, that the offense is the more interesting and in-depth area for us to be able to talk about. So why don't we start with the defense and kind of what we're seeing there. And, you know, you asked me when we were doing production for this right beforehand, you know, if you had to rate this defense on a scale of how concerned you are from 1 to 10, where would you rank it? So I have a number in my head, but I'll let you answer first since it's your question.
Okay, fair enough. I would say right now I'm about a 7 to 8. Maybe I'll set a 7.5 because I think there have been some good things that I've seen. There's a lot of turnovers and a lot of guys making plays in the secondary. And that's kind of how the defense has survived, but they're giving up a ton of yards and kind of the secondary or tertiary members of the defense have really been picked on. And that's something that they're going to have to figure out, whether it's from scheme or just identifying who their guys are and sticking with them.
Yeah, you know, when you asked me that question initially, I said 10, and I was half joking, half serious. But, you know, I think actually it's not a full 10, right? Because, you know, part of what we're seeing is really good individual performances. And I think that you mentioned that from turnovers, right? Humphrey and Peters both had phenomenal games. Marcus Williams has been everything that you have expected from him. Justin Houston has been, when healthy, a phenomenal player and a serious contributor to this team. So you've seen individual guys be able to take this defense to the place that you want to see it perform. I think you've seen a couple guys underperform. Maybe Patrick Queen and Josh Vimes would be the two guys you might label as currently, you know, and the young corners that you talked about as underperforming. But to me, some of it is just communication and scheme-related issues. And really the Ravens needing to be able to identify where they need to give help, where they're going to get attacked, and where they can leave certain guys, you know, be on an island. So, you know, the one big passing play on the crosser to Jalen Armour Davis in this game, or against him, was one of those ones where Chuck Clark ends up kind of sitting in like a hook or a robber route underneath that route. And it's almost as though he needs to know that, I think it was Peters that was underneath as well, is not going to need the help there, right? And that the potential of a crosser and Armour Davis coming across the field, it is where he's going to need to be. And he needs to be the one to be able to take away that throw. And that's not a knock on Chuck Clark, because I think that you have to scheme these things up. You have to communicate them in advance. You have to be thinking about those kind of things. And if the Ravens defense can get there, I think you'll see some of these big chunk plays, at least in the passing game, go away really quickly. I think the real area for concern, though, is that the run defense just is not getting it done. And there doesn't appear to be any saving grace here. Josh Bynes appears to have lost that step that he needs to be an effective run defender. And Patrick Queen, I just don't think is going to get there at a pro level.
Yeah, I think, honestly, that's probably where I'm more concerned at this point. Even though most teams aren't going to have a really good run game, so that's maybe not as big of a concern just from like an overall, you know, where the NFL is at today. Like, there's not that many teams that can really pound it down your throat, so to speak, and just make you pay for not being able to stop the run. And a lot of teams are built that way. They're built to, you know, be better against the pass than against the run. So this isn't a Ravens-specific issue, but it's not something that we're used to seeing with this defense. Michael Pierce might potentially have a very significant injury. I don't think we know the extent of that yet, so wait and see, but it sounds like he might be headed to IR. He might be done for the season, which would be very unfortunate, because I think he's played well through the first, you know, three games. Fortunately, Travis Jones came back. You know, he was at least a big body. He didn't make any particular splash plays of note in this game, but you know, I think Justin Madubuike has played well. So you do still have some players up front. You know, Brent Urban was a healthy scratch in this one, so he's someone you could call up to be a little bit more of a significant contributor, as well as I think Isaiah Mack might be in line to be caught up for the practice squad. He's someone who splashed in the preseason. It's good to have him available if you need that. So there could potentially be some reinforcements there. Also some reinforcements coming at the edge rusher position. You know, the Ravens are signing Jason Pierre-Paul, obviously a vet. He's been around the league for a long time. He's a player who has a lot of career success. He's been a leader. He's been on some good teams. I think he will help. And then you have to hope that maybe, you know, Tyus Bowser comes back sometime in the next couple weeks and hope he can contribute as well. And then that should definitely help out the pass rush. We don't know how long Justin Houston could potentially be out, how serious his groin injury is. Hopefully not too serious, because like you said, he has been one of the better players up front for the Ravens. So, you know, all these things, you have to kind of hope that there's a ability to contribute to getting to kind of like a mediocre level of defensive play. I don't think they're ever going to be like the top five unit that we might have envisioned, at least until there's some different schematic things that can come in and really kind of shore up some of the issues we've seen.
Yeah, it really does feel like the depth bug is already catching up to this team, though. If Pierce was a starter, but you've already lost Fuller, your kind of third corner that was going to give you a little insurance to protect some of those running backs. You're losing Pierce now. You're seeing some ineffectiveness from your inside linebackers, from guys like Bynes. I know it's not an injury, but I think I would qualify that as age. And it does feel like it's catching up to this team a little bit. But, you know, we talked about it last week. This Ravens team has got a lot of reinforcements that are on the way or could be on the way, you know, and even David Ajabo, a guy that you didn't mention, is, you know, maybe a guy that comes back week 8, 9, 10, 11, and ends up being a contributor down the road as well. And, you know, then, you know, if all these guys are operating together and you squeeze something out of Jason Pierre-Paul, you've got Houston, you've got Ajabo, you've got Bowser, you've got Oweh, now you've got a set of pass rushers to rotate at the right time of the year. So it's concerning now. And the depth, I think, in these middle few chunk of games is concerning. And these are two big games coming up on the schedule with Buffalo and Cincinnati. But, you know, I think the depth looks better, a little bit better right now long term, barring kind of any more hits to any more guys. But if more, if there are any other significant injuries that come in, it's going to, shades of 2021 are going to be here in a hurry.
Yeah, and like in this past game against New England, we saw Calais Campbell get, you know, banged up, and he has come out of the game. He obviously came back and had, I think, a pretty nice game. He was asked to play a lot because of these kind of injuries we've had along the defensive front. You know, he's playing inside, he's playing on the edge for them now. Like, he's doing so much. He's, I think, 35 years old. Like, he should not be playing like 90% of your snaps. That's not a good place for your defense to be in. So, you know, hopefully getting these reinforcements will allow for a better rotation of players up front. Hopefully that will keep potentially some of these, you know, injuries from happening. I think it's easier to get injured when you're tired, when you're not, you know, maybe at your best out there. So ideally, we'd like to avoid those situations if possible. But I mean, what we've seen was mostly a lack of pass rush. I think that's been kind of problematic for the past 2 weeks, especially as this defensive line has gotten worn down over the course of the game. You know, and this one maybe a little different. We actually got a little bit of a boost to the pass rush in the fourth quarter. It's kind of one of those things where the momentum is maybe shifting and they're trying to get after the quarterback a little bit more when you're up with some, like, a double digit lead. So I think that helped, you know, get a couple of big stops late in the game. But we saw the opposite happen against Miami. So I don't think that's something we can count on until we get some reinforcements in that area.
You know, the one thing, you know, there are plenty of things to be concerned about. And I think that, you know, that 7-8 range from you in terms of concern over the defense is justified, but we did see a much improved game from Marcus Peters. He was off his pitch count, which was helpful, and he had a phenomenal game. Humphrey had a really good game as well, and if you've got those two guys that you can trust on the outside and you know that they're going to be there and you don't have to worry, you know, about holding a guy like Peters back, I think that does open up, you know, some of the playbook to do some other protections. And you're also just going to see really big impact games from guys like Humphrey and Peters. You know, obviously, basically the better part of three turnovers were thanks to both of them. And that's gonna bail you out of a lot of situations. And in games where, you know, teams aren't able to take advantage of kind of those third, fourth, the tertiary options in the Ravens secondary, I think you're going to see Peters and Humphrey end up making a pretty big mark on teams through the season, and maybe that's the saving grace until the rest of this team is able to either get healthy or kind of get in sync.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, you pay those players. You have Marlon Humphrey, you have Marcus Peters. They're both, you know, two of the higher paid players on the roster. They're essentially your stars, and you need to have those type of performances from those type of players to win games. They need to be kind of your lockdown guys. And then you hope you can scheme around some of the weaker links in the chain, so to speak. So I do think that that's got to be the model moving forward, trying to, you know, emphasize the strengths and trying to find ways to cover up the weaknesses. And this game, I think, was a good example of that. You know, the turnovers really, you know, kind of saved the day for a defense that let up a lot of yards, you know, especially the turnover in the end zone, the Humphreys interception. You know, they were knocking on the door of going in and basically making it, you know, I'm not sure if the Ravens were up two scores or one score at that point, but, you know, this game was basically back and forth for much of the game until you know, it kind of got out of hand in the fourth quarter because of the turnovers. But, you know, if the Ravens are going to have to go, you know, toe-to-toe with each team they play, it's going to be a long season. And, you know, they have the offense that I think can do that with pretty much any team in the league, but it's going to be difficult to have that, you know, stress, to have to score on pretty much every drive or be at risk of going down in a game. And that's not something I hope we'll have to see. And hopefully we can get, you know, a defense that can be optimistic and can kind of, you know, make these key turnovers in big situations when needed, or at least get a third down stop when they need to. And that's something that, you know, we haven't seen as consistently as we'd like to, but I hope that picks up, you know, as the season progresses.
Yeah, and a quick shout-out is worth throwing to Kyle Hamilton in this game. Obviously, huge play on the fumble to essentially seal the game and kind of wrap things up for the Ravens there. But, you know, a guy that was playing more significant snaps up to this point, the Ravens put a lot on his plate through the first two games. They really scaled it back in this game. I think he was on the field for 16 snaps, and, you know, it's a testament to a guy that is not going to give up. And I think we saw Hamilton is one of those guys that, at least in the first couple of games, he's always around the ball. He was always close to making the play. He was not terribly in the wrong position. But I think his instincts were leading him astray a little bit, or his understanding of what the defenses, all the different defenses that he needed to have. So, you know, when you're in cover two versus cover three, and when you're the single high versus the robber, and, you know, all the different things that we're asking him to do, they've narrowed his role down a little bit. And you know, that also could be some of the answers to the concerns here, where you're saying, okay, Hamilton, like, we want you to play underneath. We're not going to give you the deep protection. We're only going to do whatever certain things are going to look like, and we're going to use you effectively there, and then we're going to build on that. I think that's a good progression to see from him this season. And another thing, and another reason to have some faith that this Ravens defense will look very different by the time we get to week 17 or hopefully the playoffs than it would right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point with Hamilton. He was the Ravens' first pick. You know, he has a very strong pedigree coming in. I think he's played well. He's had a few rookie mistakes, but like you said, he does seem to be a guy who's around the ball. I think he plays downhill very well. He's very instinctive, and he reacts to things that are going on in front of him. And he may not be best suited to be like your single high safety, and that's why you have Marcus Williams. And, you know, you can move them around a bit and do different things with them, but I'm interested in seeing how his role will expand. You know, having three safeties on the field is something that can give you some flexibility, but there's some, you know, personnel groups where you don't want to have three safeties on the field. Like, you need to have more cornerbacks. So I'm also hoping that there's a third corner that will emerge for the Ravens, whether, you know, Maybe they go back to the Brandon Stevens well and try him again. Maybe this is just the bad matchup for him, or maybe it will just be a matchup dependent thing. You know, some teams might have a guy that Stevens matches up better. Some teams might have a guy that Hamilton is your guy on the field more often. Some teams might have a guy where you want, you know, Demarion Williams out there. I think they've all shown flashes of very good play this season, and it's just a matter of finding that player that's going to be able to, you know, get what you need out of them and not give up the big play.
Yeah, you know, I do think it'll be interesting to see. And I think we saw Marcus Williams play, you know, I haven't watched the All-22 yet, but I think we saw Marcus Williams playing more deep, single high, being in the middle of the field, being the center fielder. There were some big plays, but they were still in front of the defense. They weren't those kind of, like, back-breaking, like, the plays to Tyreek Hill were so back-breaking 2 weeks ago. And I think Williams was more in that protector role, and we didn't, you know, he was still around the ball, and he still had, I think, a very good game, but he wasn't, you know, they weren't using him quite as much in that other way. And I think that's okay when you've got an offense like we have. You know, when you were talking about what you get out of Lamar, make teams drive. Like, and we're seeing this as the evolution of defense in the NFL. And I, you know, full credit to Dean Pease, you know, during his time, you know, especially the latter part of his time with the Ravens defense, it was very much the same approach where we're going to make teams work their way down the field. It's going to have to be 8, 9, 10, 11 plays. You're going to have to earn every bit of it. We're going to be disciplined. The Ravens have done a phenomenal job of not getting penalties called on them this year. And then we've got playmakers like Humphrey and Peters and Marcus Williams. And when you make a mistake in some of those instances, we're going to make you pay for them. And then if you give us a +2 margin of possessions in this game, you're just not going to be able to beat this team. And if you make a team also drive longer, and this is the thing that drove me the craziest about the Miami game, you make them take the air out of their own clock, right? Like, you start to force them to change how they have to approach things based on the amount of time that they've got left. If you're able to, you know, kind of essentially use them to do their own ball control. So, you know, that's what teams are doing to Kansas City. That's what happened to Buffalo in Miami. You know, you see a team that gains the other team by 200 total yards. Josh Allen throws the ball 60 times with like 45 completions, still loses the game. Make them work for it, and then make a turnover happen, just like the Ravens did in this game.
Yeah, and one last thing I'll say about the defense before we kind of put a bow on it and go move over to the other side of the ball. But I think one of my concerns is that both in the past two games against Miami and against New England, I think, you know, the offenses that we've played, they've kind of just done what they have put on film. Like, they haven't done anything that was, like, unique to try and attack this defense. They kind of just, you know, did the thing that they've been doing. And I feel like the Ravens didn't have a great plan for that. And that's a little concerning to me, because that's kind of like the coordinator to identify what does this offense want to do and what am I going to do to try and take that away. And I don't think that really worked in either of those past two games. And maybe against Miami it's a little unfair, because I think they actually did a pretty good job through most of the game, and then it was kind of like injuries and maybe fatigue that kind of bit the Ravens a little bit.
I think it was more blown assignments than fatigue in the Miami game.
That too. But I think those go hand in hand, because I think, you know, blown assignments sometimes come from fatigue and being on the field and being young players who aren't, you know, as familiar with what's going on. So yeah, so it's probably, you know, all those three things combined. But in the end, I would like to see a better scheme, I think, in order to take away what an offense is trying to do. And to some extent, I think that's happened because, you know, I feel like they felt against Miami that they couldn't really run man-to-man against those two receivers. So they did a lot of zones. They tried to make them kind of just win underneath. And that obviously worked for part of the game. Then they just couldn't, you know, they kind of made mistakes. And in this game, you know, they played a lot more man, at least from what I could tell. Like I said, I haven't seen all 22, but you could tell that there was a lot more man coverage. But the fact is that that third receiver, whoever was matched up against whatever, you know, cornerback was out there other than Humphreys and Peter, that was the guy that was being targeted, and he wasn't getting help, and he was just getting kind of beat in these one-on-one situations. And there was a lot of in-breaking routes that the Ravens have kind of struggled at covering the middle of the field. So I think that's areas that they can improve. And hopefully, you know, as the, you know, reinforcements come from the pass rush and the defensive line, that also means that, you know, they'll be able to kind of figure out things on the back end a little bit more to go along with that.
Yeah, well, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I agree completely with your analysis that the Ravens were not defending the things that you would think that other teams would be coming at. But you know what? They could be working on a lot of different things right now in terms of those installations and the changes in terms of the scheme that they wanted to have. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. And there's still upside in this defense. But, you know, who knows? Maybe the defense is, and this is a crazy thing to be saying as a Baltimore Ravens fan, but maybe the defense is just not going to matter. and you know, it's great to have legends like Ray Lewis and Ed Reed as Terrell Suggs as kind of the historical guys, but this offense is, I said it when we came into the season, and I said it when we came, I've been saying this since 2019, so I'm a broken record in that regard, but Lamar has the ability to take this offense to a place that I think will be rarefied air for any player in the history of the NFL, and at least through the three games that we've seen this year, unequivocally Lamar Jackson has been the best player on the field in the games that he has been in, and I don't think that there really is a meaningful question, at least in my mind, that he's been the best player in the league so far this year.
Yeah, I think that's clearly true. I mean, just by going by the numbers, like what he's done from, you know, the touchdown perspective, from, you know, he's leading the league and touchdown passes. He's, I think, leading the league in passer rating. He's, I think, top five in rushing yards. He has a couple of rushing touchdowns as well. Like, he has the whole thing going, and with the on-pace numbers that he's putting up are absolutely insane. And I think if he continues, maybe not even at this insane level, but, like, even at, like, a moderately normal pace, based off the level of play he's been at, I think he will definitely, you know, get his second MVP. And that's also going to be probably because it's clear how much he means to this Ravens offense. Like, he is everything that they do.
Right. You look at a guy like Jalen Hurts, who is having a phenomenal year. He's got a fantastic offensive line in front of him that's completely intact. He's got two top-end wide receivers. He's got a great tight end as well, a great stable of running backs behind him. You know, at least up to this point in the season, Lamar Jackson is playing behind a line that still has had some question marks in terms of both kind of injuries and kind of whatever else you want to consider those. I think that nobody thinks that, at least at this point, Rashad Bateman and Devin Duvernay are Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. So, you know, no one's better, in my opinion, than Mark Andrews in the league at tight end right now. But, you know, ultimately, you know, you say, well, maybe Lamar pulls back a little bit. I think the only thing that can pull Lamar back is the running game getting going, and Dobbins and Edwards coming back, or Justice Hill. And we'll talk about the running backs, but the running game seeing, you know, really significant improvements, and then the Ravens just turn into a clock grinding team. That could slow him down. I think the Ravens running, like if the second half of games looks like, in this New England game, looks like the first half, then you could see Lamar not playing a lot like we did in 2019. That could potentially slow him down. But I don't think anything that we're seeing from Lamar right now is anything particularly otherworldly, like in terms of kind of like how things have played out. It's not like the Ravens have been lucky in terms of like the number of possessions they've had, or like situational stuff, and like they've gotten a bunch of turnovers inside their own red zone, and so it's just like left Lamar in really good position. He's just making really good reads and really good throws. He's mastering the pocket, and his awareness and his ability to do that has been phenomenal this year, and the weight that he put on has not affected his ability to run the ball, and he's been phenomenal as a runner even without a running game for the rest of this team. And so it's almost like this should be what we expect from Lamar as the standard, I think. And that only if really crazy things happen in a positively beneficial way that you would get an even kind of better performance. But I think this is just what we're going to get from Lamar for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, at some point as he gets older, he probably will, you know, move away from the running a little bit more. I think he'll run less probably as he continues to grow as a quarterback. But that's always going to be a part of his game. He's always going to be a very athletic person. But he's shown this year that he can do it from anywhere. You know, he's been a complete pocket passer. He's really done an excellent job of navigating the pocket, you know, keeping his eyes downfield, like finding open receivers, you know, breaking the pocket when he needs to, but still keeping, you know, looking downfield and trying to make a play with his arm before he, you know, he takes off on the scrambles. He hasn't had that many scrambles this year. I think it's maybe like four or five. Most of the yardage he's picked up has been on design runs, and even then he's been extremely efficient in those plays. You know, aside from maybe a couple of those runs in the Miami game where they weren't able to pick up short yard situations, but overall he's been extremely explosive in both the running game and the passing game, and it's just been, you know, a joy to watch. And you know, before like we move on to kind of a little bit more of the nuance of what was happening, I just want to also give credit to, I think, Greg Roman and the offensive coaching staff, because a lot of the things that we've been talking about from like schematically, like, you know, not always running on first down, you know, more play action, under center, doing different things with the run game in terms of like, you know, you see some zone here, we see some like pin pull, we see still a lot of the same like, you know, pull like gap schemes as well. But it's a more advanced offense, and it's been, you know, executed extremely well for the most part. There have been some issues with blocking in the run game in particular, but overall, I think just what's being put together from a schematic perspective is what we wanted this offense to look like, and it's been, you know, obviously it's paying dividends. Like, it's clicking at an extremely high level.
Yeah, I you know, it's definitely working in bursts, and I think, you know, it's not a, there have been a few moments where it has felt like things have been a little stubborn, but the Ravens have moved on from those things pretty quickly. We have not seen them really try and force the issue on kind of some, like the short yardage situations is a good example where I think we saw a lot of evolution in that, even from game two to game three. So we want to kind of see those things happening. And if they do, then again, the sky remains the limit, because if Justin Tucker doesn't have to be on the field for this team to kick field goals because they're scoring touchdowns on the regular, there's just, you're going to have a performance like you got from Miami at the end of games. And the Ravens aren't going to lose games. They aren't going to lose another game like they lost to Miami this year. That is like where they're up kind of multiple scores and they're going to get beat over the top, and it's going to be huge chunks of time that, or, you know, huge chunk plays that are kind of creating those touchdowns. So it's almost good in a sense that the Ravens got that out of their system. They understand what that looks like. They know, they know not to be beat in that way. So that's not going to be kind of the thing that, that ends up stinging them when it comes down to it. But Lamar's ability to just be a genuine red zone threat at all times, you know, really more like 25 or 30 yards of scoring a touchdown from any part of the field kind of at that range just makes this, it makes it an undefendable team. And it is good to see that Greg Roman kind of getting all that intact. I think the one thing I would worry about for this team is that the offensive line depth could become an issue. We're down to, you know, what is now our fourth left tackle. I thought Ben Powers had a better game this game. But I do worry a little bit that another hit to the offensive line in terms of health could be a real doozy for this team.
Yeah, it's a little scary, especially I think if you go back to this New England game after McCarrie went out and Falele went in to play left tackle, there was a couple of plays where Morgan Moses got a little nicked up and he was kind of like hobbling around. And I was like, what happens if Morgan Moses goes down? And then who do you play at tackle? That is a nightmare scenario with Stanley still, you know, coming back from the ankle injury. You have to hope that he's close to getting back on the field. You have to hope that Patrick McCarrie's ankle injury isn't serious. You know, I think the report came out today that it was a low ankle sprain. That tends to have a shorter turnaround than like one of those lingering high ankle injuries that can last, you know, a month or longer. So, you know, it's possible that McCarrie is ready to go next week. It's possible Stanley's ready to go next week. But, you know, if not, then you have to lean on Falele and probably have to elevate somebody off the practice squad. I think Daniel Sharp, is that his name? I think they still have him. Mm-hmm. So he's probably going to be like your reserve tackle if you need that. It's not an ideal scenario, but at least you have someone who's been like in the building and around the team for a couple years. So it is a scary situation. I do want to give credit to Daniel Falele, who's never played left tackle in his entire career in college. He came in, he had some struggles early on in that game. There was a couple of drives that got kind of torpedoed because of some poor play, but I think we saw him improve over the course of the game. And, you know, if he is your swing tackle fourth reserve option, then I think you're not in the worst place in the world, because I think they actually came together and gelled pretty well in that second half. The running game got going, and, you know, I'm pretty happy that that's your worst option. I think you can do a lot worse. I think Ravens have been in worse scenarios in the past, whether it was as, you know, as recent as this last season where you had, two seasons ago, I think the right tackle situation was really poor. And obviously last year it was Villanueva at left tackle, and then it was kind of trying a couple of other guys at right tackle. So I'm thinking that it could be worse than where they're at right now.
Yeah, to me it's one of those situations where you just hope that you can get a little bit close to average play out of any of the backups that are ultimately coming in. And I think that, you know, I mentioned earlier Lamar's pocket presence has really seemed to improve this year. And I think there were probably three or four plays this game that he just got out of pressure and turned it into, you know, a couple of them didn't turn into anything. They were incomplete passes, but his ability to maneuver within the pocket, to get away from guys, to bail out his offensive linemen. I mean, Lamar Jackson made Orlando Brown Jr. a lot of money. and it'll be really interesting to see what Kansas City ultimately does with Orlando Brown and how much they end up paying him. But it goes to show you that, you know, when Falele was playing terrible and you know, I do think he deserves credit for coming and playing a position he never played, all of those things. But when he was in the first half at left tackle, it was pretty much the worst performance that you could see from a left tackle, and that unplugged the offense. Once that picked back up, the Ravens were completely on fire in the second half in terms of what they were able to do. And I don't think there were significant changes to what the approach was on offense at that point. So that it's just good to know that if you can get decently close to league, at least average kind of performances from these offensive linemen, I think they'll be all right. And the bottom line is we hope Ronnie Stanley is back soon. You know, he didn't go on the physically unable to perform list to start the year or the IR. that tells me that he's a guy that was at least trying to get back for this game in Buffalo. That is the only point of him not staying on the physically unable to perform list, right? And not getting the practices and waiting until week five to come back.
Well, I think the key there is the practice, because if you're on the PUP list or if you're on the IR, you can't practice with the team. So if you're on the active roster, you can be out there practicing and getting individual work, being able to do like the limited practices that he's been doing. So I don't disagree with you that, you know, week four might have been kind of circled on the calendar as this is when we'd like to have you back. It's a big game, obviously, week five as well. But I think also that it gives him kind of like a month of ramp up time to be out there practicing with the team, because when you've been away from the game for as long as he has, I think having that build up and having that trust both in himself and in the offensive line schematically as a whole, I think that all that matters. So we'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe this will be the week, but I think it'll be soon. And I think, you know, they really can't afford to probably go the entire season without him. So at some point, I'm pretty sure he will be. But the potential of getting him out there and then having, you know, taking an offensive line that so far is, I think, in pass protection has been pretty good. You know, outside of a few issues here and there this past week with Falele coming in, you know, Lamar hasn't been under pressure like he has been in years past. But I'm thinking specifically about last year, where I feel like it was every other drop back, he was under pressure. It's been better so far this year, and I think that's definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, and let's talk about, you know, a dynamic that Ronnie Stanley could potentially bring back to this team that we saw back in spades in this game, which was the option running game. You know, the Ravens were pulling every which way, every which guy. There were plays where Zeitler and Moses were pulling in one direction together, which is not something that, you know, I think we had a lot of anticipation for headed into this year, but we saw a lot of different pulls, a lot of different action. You had Lamar, you know, giving him that read, and not just some running plays, you know, they folded in some run pass options into all that. I mean, the end around fakes, the running back fakes, I mean, New England was being stressed to the ends of both sides of the defense on a regular basis, and ultimately cracked under the pressure of, you know, what that option running game brought back to this team. It's very much like kind of the Giants game of the 2020 season, as I kind of recall it, as being that turning point of when, you know, with the counter bash kind of coming into play, and then just being the presence of what they did for the rest of the year, ironically enough, also with J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, and that's interesting that maybe there is that through line with Dobbins coming back, and him being kind of an important part of that option running game. But this definitely was the week that we've seen more of it than we have in the past couple weeks. And it's also maybe an homage to that the 2019 game against the Patriots, where and that might have been like the Ravens' offensive coming out party. And they had the Patriots' defense in fits that year, if I'm remembering correctly, with the option, with the read option. And, you know, that was a season where the Patriots, I don't know if you remember this, but they were a dominant defense heading to that game. And they were giving up like 7 points a game. Like, they were, I don't know if they were undefeated. They might have had one loss at that point, but they were seen as like the cream of the crop of the AFC. And then the upstart Ravens come and just smack them. And this game was not quite as like obvious, maybe, and kind of like you know, because the Ravens were, you know, favored, they were expected to be the better team going into this one, but it was an impressive performance by the offensive line, by that scheme that, you know, was employed. The Patriots didn't really have any option to handle this running game. Like, they were being hammered by it, and, you know, the Ravens, this is the Ravens, you know, rushing attack that we've seen over the past, well, I don't say last year because it was really terrible last year, but in 2019 and 2020 that was really, really hard to defend. And if you can have that clicking at a high level, along with, you know, the evolution of Lamar as a passer, as a pocket passer, as an under center quarterback, it's really going to just have a sky is the limit kind of thing for this offense. And it's going to be exciting to see it, as I think they're going to continue to break out even more and more things as Dobbins gets back healthy, as Stanley gets healthy. We'll see, maybe even Nick Boyle can come back and be an integral part of the blocking game, because he was a really key part of that option blocking scheme that they've had in the past as well.
Yeah, well, there were a few plays that stood out to me during this option game that I thought were really effective. One of them was probably the more obvious one that everyone remembers, which was the first touchdown to Andrews on the option play. And Lamar does such an effective job of spacing the field and drawing the defenders to him. And they completely collapse on him in a way that they probably wouldn't collapse against, you know, anybody else. And that play is borderline, I think, undefensible for a lot of teams, because if those two defenders don't commit to Lamar like that, he's going to beat one of them to the edge, and he's probably going to score a touchdown no matter what. If the other guy sags back and continues to cover Andrews, it does take away that pass, but it's going to give Lamar that open option to run. And so in this instance, they both collapse to Lamar, and teams are just going to have to make that choice. They're going to have to decide what they want to do. And I think ultimately you'll see teams, if that play were to be run for the rest of the year, you know, in those situations, I think teams will continue to make the decision to force Lamar to try and throw that and throw the shovel pass and create the opportunity to have something get messed up in that part of the process, because they know that Lamar's so electric when he's running to the, especially when he's running to the pylon like that, that in one-on-one situations, other than maybe like Aaron Donald and a handful of edge defenders that are super twitchy and unbelievably fast, or guys that are just not going to be able to defend him in those plays like that.
Yeah, and that wasn't the only option pass to Andrews in this drive either, because there was, I think it was earlier on, it was kind of like a fake to the back. I think it was Justice Hill in this play, and then Andrews was kind of just like sitting for like basically like a wide receiver screen. He was flexed out as a wide receiver, and he was basically uncovered, and it was just an easy kind of like RPO to Andrews, and he picked up, I don't know, like 15, 20 yards, because there was like a blocker out in front, and it was just a really nicely designed play and easy chunk yardage. And I feel like we saw plays like that, you know, throughout the course of this game. There was another shovel pass to Isaiah Likely that we saw go for. I think that one was only went for like 8 yards, but still, it was, you know, very effective. And the defense looked completely caught off guard. You know, you just have like one or two blockers out front, and that's a nice pickup, and that's just kind of opening up the playbook. And you know, we're only through 3 weeks, but you know, I think in the off season we heard Greg Roman talk about, you know, I think he can finally like access the entirety of the playbook. And whether that was, you know, a backhanded compliment or however you want to take that, I think we're actually seeing that happening. And I think it's fun to watch, because it's something that we've wanted to see for a long time. But it also just goes to like the talent level of Lamar, that he can like take on all these different things, because most quarterbacks don't have, you know, the option game as like a major part of the offense, and then have like the normal like drop back passing game. But he's doing both of them, and being like the number one rusher on the team and being like a dominant passer. It's just incredible what he's taken on.
No, it definitely is. But and you know, what I wanted to try and do with in kind of this discussion is talk a little bit about some of these other position groups too, though, because look, I could talk about Lamar for 3 hours and all the different things that he does and all the ways and the dynamics of kind of how he's effective. The other play that really stood out to me with Lamar was the one option where he took it on the quarterback power play, and you had Zeitler pulling in front of him, and basically Lamar uses Zeitler, was patient, lets him get into his block, and then it's just an easy 15-yard gain. And I think, like I talk about Lamar for a long time, the other thing I'll say is Lamar's done a really good job of not taking big hits. Like, he gets out of bounds, he gets down, he gets out of the way. His body has not been on the line. There wasn't a hit, at least in this game, that I felt like Lamar was super, super at risk. But I do think that he's been getting some contributions from some of the other guys in the locker room on offense, which, you know, we're kind of maligned. You know, I feel like there was a lot of criticism about non-Lamar Ravens offensive players headed into this year, and there are a few guys that I think that really deserve a little bit of credit and shout-outs here.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think the obvious candidate for that is Devin Duvernay, who's really stepped up into like the number two wide receiver role. I think he has 3 touchdowns now in the season. Oh, 4 touchdowns if you include if you include the return touchdown, right? And he's been used in the passing game, I think, more than he has in previous years, especially more like downfield passing and intermediate passing. He was kind of like a gadget player before. Maybe he would get like a wide receiver screen or kind of a quick slant kind of thing, but he's definitely been an actual like contributor in a significant way. And then, you know, he's still being used in some of these jet motions, and, you know, there were a couple of like fakes to him that were working really well in this game in particular. You know, he hasn't had any big kind of gains on when he's kept the ball. I think there were 2 plays where he had runs and it didn't really pick up much in this game, but, you know, that might come, and it kind of depends on how it's blocked and how it's schemed up as well. But I think just having him and his speed and his ability is a real nice complement to what the other skilled players on this team are. You know, I think you have a better known quantity with Andrews and Bateman. We had expectations for them coming in, but Duvernay we didn't really have that kind of expectation for him, and he's gone well above and beyond what I think anybody expected.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting things where some of that was also opportunity, and it felt like Duvernay just never really got that chance. You know, we heard about his hands coming out of college and how sticky they were. We've definitely seen that this year.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like on the deep passes to Duvernay in prior years, like he really just didn't get a fair chance, right? Like there weren't opportunities for him to showcase those hands and do those things. I think there's some irony that the Ravens are using even less wide receivers than it feels like they ever have in the Lamar Jackson era. And Duvernay is still making this impact as well. And I think that's something that, you know, full credit to him to be able to take the opportunity and moments that have been there. And, you know, I know Prochet hasn't been active, but, you know, similar kind, you know, obviously a little bit or a lot better pedigree from Duvernay, at least from where he played in college. But, you know, you heard similar things about those two guys. And I want sticky-handed wide receivers that, you know, find ways to get open when they need to. And it's nice to know that the Ravens have finally been able to kind of take one of those guys that they have drafted and turn him into someone that actually gets a decent role on the team.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that Lamar has faith in him, because I think, you know, whether or not that was there or wasn't there in previous years, it seemed like, you know, it was Hollywood and it was Andrews, and those were the two guys that Lamar wanted to pass to, and this year that's expanded. You know, he's been willing to throw to more targets and spread the ball out more, and I think that's really important, and it's a big step for the offense moving forward.
I also want to give, you know, Rashad Bateman has not been phenomenal. The fumble was not a fumble. I still don't know how that play ultimately wasn't reviewed and at least specifically ruled on. But that shiver move that he put on the corner in the fourth quarter goes to show where the upside is for Bateman as well. Because that was, I mean, he baked that guy out of his pads. And Bateman has been pretty consistent this year in terms of what you're able to get from him, his separation, his ability to catch the ball. His hands have been consistent, and Lamar really does seem to trust him as well, too.
Yeah, and I think Bateman has done everything that's been asked for the most part. Maybe there's like a couple of drops, or in this case, a fumble that you obviously would like to see corrected, but he's been, I think, a really important part of this offense, and he's maybe taken on that role of being a true number one, where he's getting some, you know, some attention from the defense. I think that happened to a certain extent in this game, where he was kind of gaining some of the attention and maybe letting some of the other players have more single opportunity coverages. I don't know that for certain, but I think I saw a little bit of that from what I could see. He's just a really special ability after the catch, which I didn't know he had coming out of college. I knew he was kind of like decent in that area, but he's, as I looked at the stats today, he's averaging 13.7 yards after catch per catch, which obviously stems a lot from that long run catch and run he had against Miami. But like, still, like, it's not just that one. You talked about the play in this game where he picked up like 20 yards after the catch, and he's had other, you know, plays like that as well. And I think, you know, he's going to be someone who is a consistent, you know, important part of this offense moving forward. He's number 4 in the NFL in yards per route run, over 3 yards per route run. And he's not on the field as much as some of these other wide receivers, and that might be part of that. But that's an efficiency stat, and that's incredibly good. That's something that, you know, we've seen Mark Andrews be extremely high on it in the past. But to have, like, your number one wide receiver and your number one tight end both putting up incredibly high efficiency stats is, you know, is a big part of why this offense is so successful.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought it was funny before we started talking about this. I looked up where the total targets were, or the total receptions for this team. And of the 56 catches, of not including Bateman and Duvernay, there have only been 4 catches by two other wide receivers total in the balance of the season. So it'll be pretty interesting to watch. You know, basically 4 catches for 40 yards from non-Bateman and Duvernay receivers, and what that number ends up extrapolating out to the end of the year. I mean, I think it'll ultimately be more, and I think DeMarcus Robinson is going to have a game where he pops off because they're going to use him on some double moves, but it would be fascinating to that group of players end up with like less than 300, you know, all other non-Bateman Duvernay receivers having a total of less than 300 yards and still seeing this offense put up the performance that we're probably going to see from it.
Yeah, and I think by the end of the season, you know, Bateman and Andrews will probably both be over 1,000 yards, I think, pretty easily, at least in my opinion.
Oh, for sure.
And Duvernay, yeah, no. You know, he's probably going to be 500-600 as well. And then, like, who's going to be, like, the next option? I think it's probably likely, right? I would imagine, if I'm guessing, he's probably the next option in terms of receiving.
Yeah. Games. Well, he's got 11 targets on the year compared to 7 for DeMarcus Robinson anyway. So he's definitely the next target. But I think this puts to bed some of the silly narrative around, oh, you need to have 4 options of wide receiver. Yeah. You need blah, blah, blah amount of depth and all these kind of things. You know, we still have some deficiencies in terms of the offense overall, but it's working just fine and likely has had some big drops. Frankly, Mark Andrews, this team still has maybe not a drops problem, but there have probably been 7 or 8 throws that Lamar has made that I thought were good that should have turned into catches this year that haven't. But that still just speaks to the volume and the quality. And, you know, let's talk about the tight ends a little bit. You know, Mark Andrews has been phenomenal. I still think he's the best tight end in the league. I think he's going to, for the second consecutive year, put up the best numbers in terms of tight ends in the league. And, you know, you and I talked about this when Andrews came into the NFL. I said that, you know, he prototyped a lot to Travis Kelce, and his career has aligned just like that. And he's, I'd say, even gotten a little bit better at a little bit younger of an age.
Yeah, there's someone who was tweeting about the comparison that you're just spoke to, the Kelce versus Andrews, and I forget who it was, but
oh, he's stealing my material.
Basically stealing your material and looking at them both from like a year that they were drafted and like their production and also like their
right.
age. And if you look at their age, it's even more impressive for Andrews because he came into the league like, I think 2 years younger than Kelce did, And Andrews... And
Kelce redshirted a year, right?
Yeah,
Kelce,
yeah,
first
exactly.
First year, he barely played for injury, yeah.
Exactly. So Andrews is basically replicating the career success of Kelce's, but starting at a younger age and being a little bit more successful even at that starting point. So, you know, we'll see how this continues to progress for him, but he is right now, I think, hands down, the best tight end in football, and it's frankly, I don't even know if it's even close at this point. Like what he can do, and you know, you mentioned a couple of the drops, which, you know, it happens. Like he's not perfect, but he has really turned into a contested catch player. He's obviously, you know, Lamar's kind of favorite target in like a third down. You need to get however many yards. He's the guy you're looking at. But his ability to win in coverage and the ability to kind of like be on the same page with the quarterback with Lamar Jackson on pretty much everything that's happening on the field, it's remarkable. He's always making himself available for Lamar when he's like scrambling or making something happen with his feet, and it's just something that's it's really fun to watch. And they're going to continue to be one of the best duos that we have in the NFL for many, many years.
Yeah, and you know what? I like how the Ravens are also using Isaiah Likely. I mean, he was never going to be able to be featured like he was as much in that one preseason game. But I think he has held up well. And you have, you know, it's always easy to think that rookies can come into the NFL and just perform, and especially rookies at tight end, and that just historically doesn't happen ever, really, with anyone. And, you know, even when you go back and look at Mark Andrews' rookie numbers, like, they're not overwhelming. And if Likely can stay on that trajectory where he continues to kind of be at kind of like a third to like 40% of what you're getting from Andrews as the second guy, the dynamic ability of them to use Likely and Andrews as threats together as we get into the end of the year and to stay in this base of 12 personnel really effectively, I think is just an area of incredible upside for this Ravens offense as well.
Yeah, and you know this 12 personnel grouping with normally it's Duvernay and Bateman and Andrews and Likely, and you know one could argue that it's almost more like an 11 personnel with Likely kind of just being like a big, you know, slot wide receiver who can also line up in line, you know, and do some things for you if you want. But you know it's just been very productive for them so far, and the receiving threats you have with the speed with the wide receivers, and then obviously the tight ends who are capable of getting open and making plays, it's really going to be difficult for teams to defend. And if they can start running effectively out of that personnel grouping, it's just going to be dynamic. I don't see how teams are going to defend it, especially with Lamar and the threat that he brings as well.
Well, and one of the other things that I think we've seen Lamar be criticized for, and I don't know that I always thought it was fair, but Lamar certainly coming into this year was criticized for not being kind of like that field general kind of guy, not being able to read the field. That was part of the criticism of his inability to read the blitz from the, I'm making air quotes, from the Miami series, or the Miami game going back to last year. The Ravens have done a better job of getting to the line of scrimmage sooner, but I think Lamar has done a fantastic job of reading defenses, checks, changes of alignments, and then making the right reads in those situations. His numbers have been, I don't have them in front of me, they've been staggering against the blitz. Just go on Twitter, search for Lamar Jackson and blitz, and the numbers are going to come up. I think it's like 22 for 26 and like 6 or 7 touchdowns. It's just been phenomenal overall numbers for him. And he's been really good at the line of scrimmage. This 12 personnel grouping gives them the ability, if they want to press to the line of scrimmage more often, to put teams under stress. There were, I want to say at least 2 or 3 different times in both this game and the Miami game where the Ravens were at the line of scrimmage, and because of subs, they weren't able to snap the ball. But I don't feel like I remember that from, you know, Ravens teams from kind of the prior 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one thing that they could be doing more is staying in the same personnel grouping, and keeping teams on the field and kind of using pace, and keeping them in you know whatever personnel that the Ravens want them to be in. And that's one of the good things about, you know, having flexibility with the tight ends is you can kind of dictate what a defense can do. So I think that's an area that they can continue to exploit even more. So that's something that I think we should keep our eye out for as the season progresses. But I agree with you from what you're saying about Lamar and his command of the offense and identifying, you know, pre-snap, what teams are trying to do and post-snap, and really like seeing from like what's going on in front of him to like understand, you know, what he has to do in terms of whether it's finding a hot route or whether it's changing the play, and getting into a better protection, whatever it may be, you know, he's in full control. And that's something that I think at times, you know, maybe he wasn't allowed to do with the offense, or maybe it was something that he was still learning to a certain extent, but he's definitely there now. And that's definitely another facet as to why the offense is clicking at the level it is.
Yeah. Well, as you know, we wrap this up, I think that there's, you know, we talked a little bit about J.K. Dobbins and how it feels like Lamar feels more comfortable with him at the mesh point, and it's clear that the Ravens do not trust Mike Davis or Kenyon Drake at the mesh point, and don't even, you know, very frustrating signing of both of those guys. I mean, it feels like they rushed into the Drake signing without even giving Mike Davis a chance to kind of earn that role, and could have saved $1 million against the cap by not doing that. But but with those mesh point runs and Dobbins coming back, but you know, Justice Hill might have stolen the show at running back in terms of what he brought at, you know, as the second guy into the games this week, and a guy that I've criticized that doesn't hit the hole when it's there hard enough has always been a little hesitant and kind of was always trying to put a few two moves on too many guys and not making things happen when he had opportunities there. Certainly took advantage of them this game and looked very good.
Yeah, this might have been his I don't know if it's his best games. I think there was that game a couple years back against the Steelers where he looked really good. But at least in terms... well, in this game, he had several good runs.
Correct.
And he is seemingly coming in as the number one back, at least in terms of snaps, for the past 2 weeks. We'll see how long that lasts for. I think, you know, Dobbins probably is still on a bit of a pitch count. It seemed like they wanted to get him integrated early, but they probably had a number of snaps that they were going to try and limit it to, especially with, you know, Hill coming in and being effective in what he was doing. And it seemed like Lamar did find chemistry with Hill in terms of, like, the read option type plays, because there were a number of those mesh kind of handoffs with Hill, and there was no issue at all. Everything looked smooth. It kept, you know, the defense off guard clearly. They were very effective in those plays, so I'm confident with him in there, I think. You know, last week he did very well in pass protection. I think this week he kind of struggled in that, so that's going to be something to keep some attention to. But I think, you know, just having his speed, his explosiveness, and that ability to kind of be a change of pace if they need it, I think that's a nice, you know, option to have in your back pocket. And, you know, he was kind of roasted last week because there was that one run play where there was, like, this whole massive lane in front of him, and he kind of just ran out of bounds instead of taking it, which would have been an easy touchdown. I think in this game he made up for that. He showed that vision. He showed that explosiveness in the open field, and he was a big part of why, you know, the offense kind of got back on track, I think, in this game in particular.
Yeah, well, the idea of being able to have a Dobbins, Edwards, Hill 1-2-3 punch when they get to the end of the year is nice to know. And thinking back to 2019, it's nice to know that you've got guys that are coming back and progressing and potentially going to be better than they are by the end of the year than they were at the start of the year. You saw kind of the opposite of that in 2019, where we had Mark Ingram just kind of still effective, but, you know, the effectiveness level dropped significantly by the time he got to the end of the year, and he just wore down. So to have three guys that potentially they could rotate through, and, you know, maybe Gus Edwards only sees half the season, but could give you some of those short down opportunities and allow you to run in kind of third and fourth and short with him in a way that they didn't trust from before Dobbins came back as well. Are all super kind of big optimism things that I think that you get for this team, and it's nice to see Justice Hill being a relief of finally getting a running back to go with J.K. Dobbins as being effective. J.K. Dobbins also looked very good for his first game back, I thought. You know, I think everybody's probably seen on social media his stiff arm on the one defender on his first play, but he had another really nice catch on the right sideline. He had another play where he was through the A-gap, and he was just barely tripped up, and if he hadn't been, I think he would have broken a long run as well. So, really good to see him back and being kind of... He just seemed to flow through the game really well for a guy coming off the injuries that we've heard he's had.
Yeah, I think it was a great first game for Dobbins. He had a couple of nice catches in the passing game. He didn't show any obvious lingering effects from the injury, which is obviously a huge part of it. You know, he didn't pick up any huge chunk gains, you know, like we saw Hill get in this game, but I think those will come. Obviously, he was incredibly effective back in 2020 in his rookie year. He picked up, you know, consistently, you know, yards after contact, big gains in open field. He was able to bounce off defenders. He had incredible balance through contact. And I think that's something that's going to, you know, just take, you know, the offense to another level when he is able to be, you know, back to that full J.K. Dobbins that we saw earlier on as a rookie. And it's just another element to this offense that teams are going to be terrified about as they go up and try to defend this what so far has been pretty much unstoppable. The only thing that has stopped this Ravens offense has been, you know, when they've kind of stopped themselves in some of the bad, you know, blocking and short yarder situations. It's really been the only area where they've failed this year.
Yeah, well, a big game coming up against Buffalo, who is a banged up team on defense, and you know, hopefully the Ravens are able to take advantage of that. It's a game that gets to be at home. Ravens get back to Baltimore, so they got Cincinnati the week after that. It's going to be, it's a really important, maybe not important 2 weeks, but important in the sense that, one, we get to find out whether or not some of these guys on short-term IR and the physically unable to perform list, where they are in terms of practice and where they are in terms of coming back. Ronnie Stanley is right on the cusp of coming back. You continue to see Dobbins and Peters continue to contribute as guys that are coming off injuries, and it makes it more than interesting beyond just the two big games that they have. But you know, either way, you know, Cincinnati has an opportunity to, you know, the Ravens will have a chance to bury them in the standings, you know, in that game, and obviously, you know, put Buffalo really far behind the eight ball in terms of where the overall AFC hierarchy is if they can win both these games.
Yeah, I mean, this two game stretch might, I mean, there's a lot of divisional games in like the end of this season, but this two game stretch is really, really big. And if they can somehow come away with two wins, that would, you know, put them in the driver's seat for the AFC. And I think they have the potential to win both. They definitely look like they've been a better team than Cincinnati. I'll say that without any, you know, homerism. I think they've just been like much better, especially on offense. And then the Bills, you know, they've looked dominant in a couple of games, and last week they kind of came down to earth a little bit. They are another team that's dealing with injuries, so it's going to be an interesting one. It's in Baltimore, I think, which is going to be nice. Not, you know, to have the friendly confines of M&T Bank Stadium as opposed to having to go on the road to play a very good team, but it's, you know, this isn't going to be like the season. You know, they don't have to win this game to have a very good season, but if they can come away with one and even better two wins or this two game stretch, it's going to really set them up nicely for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, I'm excited for these upcoming 2 weeks. I think it's going to be big. I'm excited to see this team continue to grow from here. It was good to see them bounce back from Miami. If you guys want to hear more about kind of what Gabe and I think about the Ravens and where we are with those, you can find us on Twitter. He's at Gabe Fergie. I'm at Ravens Sit Room. We'd love to see you there. We're trying to get content out there to talk about Ravens. Gabe talked a little bit about some of the other things that he's been retweeting as well. So we'd love to get some conversations going out there on social media as well. So thanks for joining us, and we'll hope to see you next time in the Situation Room.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.